What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. President Biden was in Buffalo today, mourning the victims of the most recent shooting, of which, according to CNN, there's been more than 200 this year mass shootings. And again, you know, this is one of those moments you go, I think we're getting past the pandemic, COVID in the rearview mirror. At least mentally, we're thinking that, especially since today I find out that potentially, I'll find out tomorrow once I get tested, maybe I am getting all the way through the pandemic. Maybe now I have been exposed to it, because yesterday spent some time with Pennsylvania gubernatorial candidate and now winner of the Democratic primary here in Pennsylvania, for the Democratic primary. Josh Shapiro is going to be the nominee in November. But this morning he tweeted out that, yes, indeed, he has tested positive for COVID. And yes, I did spend a lot of intimate time yesterday with him. So therefore, congratulations. I may have been exposed to COVID, and I am not all too thrilled about it. So test tomorrow. I got something on the agenda. But good on Josh Shapiro for his victory. Look, still waiting for the results of the other important race here on the Democratic side. What's going to happen in the Senate race? Early results. John Fetterman, who was leading, he is leading. He was leading in the polls going in. He's leading with the results coming in. The interesting part, going to see who on the Republican side will be the governor, the Republican choice in November to run for governor, also for Senate. But we'll get to all of that stuff. But the president was in Buffalo, called for stricter gun laws. We do this stuff. It's not going to happen. Also, you know, calling out white supremacy, calling out, saying, look, you can't remain silent. And in this moment, we can't. You've got to call out the people who are doing this. And, you know, yesterday got tons of responses from my opening. And it's like a lot of people have never heard of the replacement theory, which I gotta say, I'm kind of shocked by the number of people who claim they had never heard of it. And yet, you know, the New York Times did a piece where they documented more than 400 times where the bow-tied one, Tucker Carlson, over at the F Channel, has referenced it over the last couple of years. This is part of the mainstream Republican mantra. This is part of what it's part of the anti-immigration stuff. It's part of what they've been saying, you know, for years. This is not new. And what's interesting to me is, you know, today you got people condemning Tucker Carlson, like, oh my goodness, this is new. I'm not condemning Tucker Carlson. This is who he is. It's who he's always been. There's nothing new here. To condemn him now is to admit that evidently you haven't condemned the shtick of the past. All of the prior outrage, all of the this is just the latest in a string of ridiculousness. And the weird thing is, and understand this, I don't know Tucker Carlson. I don't know if he believes what comes out of his mouth or if it's all just performative. I have met a lot of these hate mongers and homophobes and racists and misogynists over the years. I've gone to the conferences where they congregate. And what I've come around to believe is that they know what their base needs. I believe they know that the throngs of minions, that the chaos merchants like Tucker Carlson, like Sean Hannity, O'Reilly, that bongo bongo guy, the crack-addled little rat Shapiro, not Josh, that Ben Shapiro, they know what their addicts need. And they're ready, willing, like any pusher, they're willing to help their junkies get the fix that they need, of course, for a price. Because after all, this is all about money. This is all about money. It's about power and control. And I look at this in this moment going, you know, they're feeding the outrage candy to their throngs. The chaos merchants who are peddling this stuff for a price, for a profit. And then saying, oh, well, we didn't, not us. Not us. Yeah, they used our rhetoric to justify their 180-page manifestos that gave them the basis to go out into a black neighborhood and shoot up a supermarket. Yeah, but you know that's on them. It's not us. We're pure as the driven snow. We're just asking questions. Can't we just ask questions anymore? Can't we just speak truth? This bongo bongo guy. Dan Bongino. The quote that he's been circulating, telling his minions, do not be intimidated. Speak the truth. There is power and truth. There's a coordinated effort, he says, to use bloodshed and death in Buffalo to advance totalitarianism. To advance the connected elite oligarchy censorship mechanisms, and to politically target you and to shut you down. Yeah, it's going to take the tragedy of 10 people being murdered in cold blood and turn it into a rallying cry for more hatred, for more misogyny and racism and anger. Because by pointing out that the people who are pushing the replacement theory, people pushing the other isms, are causing this, are giving the dim license to go and do horrible things, somehow that's trying to shut down their free speech, trying to target them because they speak the truth. It's crazy. But, you know, they know. They know that their base, their addicted, outrage candy-fed base needs this to feel victimized. Like somehow they're the real victims in all of this. Ben Shapiro says, quote, all of MSNBC has centralized on the narrative that Tucker Carlson, who happens to be their actual media competition, must be destroyed. No, it's calling out what he's doing. It's using his actual words to say this is who he says he is. When do we believe him? Now, as I said, I don't know whether he believes it or not. Don't know the man personally. Been in a room with him once. Don't know him. Know what he says. Know what positions he takes. Don't know him personally. Don't know how much of it is shtick. Don't know, like I said, how much of it is performative. How much of it is, hey, this is feeding the masses what they want. Just giving the people what they want. What they need. And it's interesting because today is an important day. Historically, today is an interesting and important day. Today is the 68th anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education decision. And, you know, this is one of those moments where in a functional system, we could have an honest decision, an honest discussion around, was it a good decision? Was it a bad decision? Was it implemented properly? With an educated populace, you could have this discussion. In an education system, you might want to be able to go back and examine that. In a functional school system, that would be a topic of discussion, I think. But nowadays, to talk about that, that's critical race theory. What? Because anything talking about anything outside of we are the perfect country, we are exceptional, the underdog always wins, this kind of idealistic Americana that the right seems to love to paint, anything outside of that is, well, unacceptable. And we could throw into the CRT category. It's bad. It's bad. And any book that talks about that has to be burned. But replacement theory, oh, front and center. Every night on display on the F channel and all of the other right-wing rags. And really, honestly and truthfully, part and parcel of the Republican Party. This is who they've been for a very long time. Now, they used to be kind of ashamed about it. They used to do it with dog whistle. They used to do it with coded language. Now they're barking it right out, as loud and as proud as they can. The GOP is the proud boy of politics. And I'm waiting for that representative to come forward and say, yeah, that's us. Now, I look back at some of the writings today, because I did read a little bit about, where people's mindset is on, the 68 years since that 1954 landmark Supreme Court ruling that undid the idea of separate but equal and desegregated our schools. And there are some who go, look, it was one of the worst things that ever happened to the Black community. And you can look at it that way. You know, I remember when we did our civil rights tour a couple of years ago. We were in Jackson, Mississippi. And the guy who was the head of the NAACP down there took us on a tour of what had been Black Wall Street. And he walked us, all around and said, there used to be, this business and that business. And he explained how the area worked at the time. This is before Brown versus Board of Education. Before the push to desegregate. And he said, look, we had an entire economy built around Black-owned businesses, an entire travel economy around the Green Book, where, you had a Black middle class that was built. And as soon as this decision, and he was not a fan, as soon as this decision happened, all of that was eviscerated. And it was the first time that I had ever heard anyone speak negatively of that Supreme Court decision. Because I was always taught in school, this was a huge advancement forward. This was a great thing. This was the country, righting wrongs of the past. I had never heard the other side. And this is part of what education, I think, should be and what a functional democracy should be about. Having a discussion on whether a policy decision, whether a Supreme Court decision was conceived properly and then implemented properly. But we can't have that in this country because we've got fire breathers and people like the F channel who have such an outweighted microphone and play to the least of us and play to the worst in us. that we can't have those discussions that will make us better, that will truly make us a great country. And that's the scary part of where we are. And it's frustrating. I'd love to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. I'm curious, your thoughts. Are they just, you know, speaking the truth? Or is it worse than that? Quick break. If you miss any of the program, make sure you grab our podcast. Share the podcast with your friends. Like, subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating, if you will. Also make a comment. Love to see that as well. Quick break. Back after this. If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickssmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickssmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today's an important day in the midterm world. Super Tuesday, if you will. You've got midterms. You've got primary day in Kentucky, North Carolina, here in my state of Pennsylvania, Idaho, Oregon. Lots of decision-making happening. Here in Pennsylvania, some big, big races. And for me, going to find out just how crazy our state's going to be maybe in November. On the Republican side, wow, potentially way off the deep end on where the Republican Party has gone. And I'm waiting for those results as we speak. But yeah. Now, what's interesting is you see some of the polling, and this is where it's important to me. I think the Republican Party really has shown, because look, none of the Republicans in this state have gotten the majority. I mean, their numbers are, each of them are in the 20 range. They're going to have an uphill climb in the general, you know, getting everybody back into the fold. This is where, you know, talking about the issues that are important and having a plan on how to get forward is important, which I think why this recent Pew survey is kind of important in talking about what really is important to Americans and what's worrying them. Obviously, inflation is the big thing. You know, most people are worried about, hey, how am I gonna put food on the table? How am I gonna pay the bills? But you know, close second is healthcare. You know, how are we gonna make sure that we have health security? For instance, I have no concern whatsoever about if I get sick, if I do have COVID, that I'm going to be able to get the care that I need. Now, am I going to worry about if I get sick, how sick I'm going to get and all that? Yeah, but I'm going to worry about getting well. I don't worry about the cost because I know I've got good health insurance that, you know, my union fought for and all of that. I want that for everybody. And this is one of those things that families worry about at night. We should have policies that move us in that direction. And then really close after that are violent crime and gun violence. We are seeing real problems, and a lot of it's in the news, but we're seeing really problems. Another thing that they pointed out is federal budget deficits. I don't know why the average person is worried about federal budget deficits. I don't know how that is so high on the list when you start looking at some of the other things like education and unemployment and you know, the virus. I have no idea why budget deficits is above climate change. But, you know, there it is. And for me, this is one of those moments where, you know, run on issues that are going to make people's lives better, that are going to get us back into the to the center of the road. Run on policies that are going to, especially on the Democratic side. This is why I like John Fetterman, who's running for Senate here in Pennsylvania. When he talks about issues, it's about how are we going to move families forward? How are we going to make sure that, you know, when he was mayor of Braddock, one of the poorest communities in the state of Pennsylvania, it was about, you know, how are we going to make sure that those folks in his community could feed their kids, keep a roof over their head, get clothing. They used to do just amazing things around, you know, free store, pop-up stores and things that where they would bring resources in to help the community. It was about that kind of community. It was about that kind of we're all in this together. And I think we can do those things. I think we're capable of doing that. But somehow we got to tear down this right-wing barrier, this stuff that is deliberately thrown in our way to divide us, deliberately thrown in our way to ensure that we never talk to each other and never get near each other. Because, you know, ultimately, I do think we agree on a lot of the same things. And this is this frustrating part of this. When you look at inflation, it hurts all of us. It isn't, there's no ideology that gets away from this. Yeah, I know. You know, but Rick, the very wealthy gets away. Yeah, they do, because it doesn't matter to them. But if you're a working person, it doesn't matter which team you're on. Yeah, I found it interesting that Jeff Bezos, one of the richest guys in the country, was thanking Joe Manchin, you know, for stopping Joe Biden from making things worse, buying into the idea that Biden had spent, giving you $1,400 somehow, you know, inflated the economy to the point to where, you know, we just can't possibly spend anymore. Whereas, you know, when Trump gave away the $1,800 to every person and all the $1.9 trillion to the very wealthy, that didn't matter. But the second they started talking about how we're going to help you, how we're going to help your family, how we're going to invest in your future and my future, then that somehow became too much. Understand what they're telling us. Understand what they're doing to us. And then hold them accountable for it. What I see in front of us is simple. Corporate America is gouging us. They see an opportunity, good old-fashioned American greed, and they're gouging our eyes out, man. They're taking advantage of this moment because they know it's not going to last long. They know that eventually the Fed's going to raise interest rates to the point where they're not going to get the cheap money like they used to, and eventually there's going to be enough unemployment to bring down the kind of, and this is what they want, because they don't want you to have options in jobs, because right now there's jobs are plentiful, which means that people have the ability to change jobs, and the great resignation gives us opportunity to go, you know what, I'm not taking this, I'm going across the street. And that raises wages, and they hate that. Understand what is happening. The business roundtable and the people who really control what's going on, they know what they're doing. They're making a huge amount of profit because they can. And they're beginning to figure out how to tap down our ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. They're going to crush the organizing that's going on one way or another. And part of that is by, well, saying we're going to just cause inflation to the point to where you squeal. And the fact that Bezos uses Manchin as as the example is sadly laughable, but not surprising. We are in most certainly interesting times, which is why come election time, We need to vote for pro-worker candidates, for people who understand this, and people who are going to push policies that are going to make things better for the working class of this country, who are going to fight for better health care access, better educational access, better opportunities for you and me. That's my thought. Love to hear yours. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Also, remember, never miss an episode, never miss a moment. Make sure you grab the podcast. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So with gas prices where they are, and I don't know anybody who's thrilled, except for maybe ExxonMobil and Shell and BP and all of the executives there who are reaping enormous profits at our expense. But none of the people, none of the working folks I know thrilled with the cost of gas. And oh, by the way, I know where I live, the electric company is going to start gouging us just a little bit more with a massive rate increase. I saw that's coming about 32%, I think. We should see our bills go up. So it's a perfect time to go, well, a perfect time would have been 30 years ago, but now is a perfect time to go, hey, how about some alternative energy, like maybe some solar panels like I have got on my house? And I'm sure glad I did that, you know, 10 years ago. We should be doing this across the board. Now, what's interesting is you've got a small solar company who's got some value saying, hey, how about we make those here or at least not with slave labor? Seems reasonable, seems rational, but no, we've got folks saying, no, we want slave labor. Here to share some thoughts on this story that I'm looking at the Wall Street Journal paper, the newspaper of the investor class. They call this Oxen Solar the most hated solar company in America. That's why I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it is great to be with you, as always.
So the most hated solar company in America, this very small company out in California, has said, hey, you know, maybe make it here or at least somewhere that doesn't abuse its workers. Kind of refreshing to me.
Yeah. I mean, there are consequences, I guess, to speaking truth to power, huh? And I guess you develop a reputation like Auxin is, which is the name of the company. It's based in California, and they manufacture there. Yeah, the background on this is something else. I mean, we, like you, I mean, I fully agree. I think solar is one of the energy sources of the future. Residential, commercial, utility scale, I think we gotta do it. We have a comparative advantage of in sun in the United States of America. We're well positioned to make it a cheap form. But the problem has been the business model that the solar installers have used for a couple of decades now is to bring in cheap stuff from China. This will sound familiar. And at the expense of growing manufacturing in the United States. And this is exactly the rub, because there have been tariffs in place on some types of Chinese solar modules or the stuff that goes into making a solar panel since the Obama administration, actually for 10 years. Trump administration went a step further with tariffs in 2018. And by the way, I will say the solar installers, the solar developers and the finishers in the United States all said the sky was going to fall when Trump put these tariffs on solar. The next year, actually, solar jobs went up, solar installations went up, the cost went down for kilowatt per hour basis for solar. And so here we have a company saying, you know what, those Chinese duties have been pretty effective. They've limited the Chinese imports of solar in the United States. But what's happening is the Chinese companies appear to be routing these solar panels through companies in Malaysia, in Vietnam, and in some other Asian countries, and then into the United States, because imports from four countries have surged and basically have replaced all the Chinese imports. And none of these countries really had a had like a domestic solar manufacturing capability.
Well,
right?
That's convenient.
Yeah, exactly. So they've all kind of been routed through there. In trade parlance, we call that circumvention, right? You're trying to work around a tariff, and it's a strategy that many have employed. And so Auxin, this company, kind of noticed this and said, you know what, this is not right. and they had the gall to file, a what's called a circumvention case at the Commerce Department, which is, by the way, routine. I mean, this happens all the time in steel and other sectors, except for this time, the solar industry has its hair on fire because its very business model is at risk here. I mean, it depends on these subsidized imports, either directly or indirectly, from China. And on top of the subsidies, which they get from the Chinese government, Rick, as you pointed out, unfortunately, the base material for a lot of these, the polysilicon, is manufactured in Xinjiang. And we know from reports and from on-the-ground evidence that much of that is made by forced labor, by Uyghurs, who are not there of their own accord in the factory. So it is it's a big challenge, and it goes back to something, and I know we have talked about this virtually every week for a while, is that we shouldn't just trade foreign oil for made in China solar. That's not a good trade-off. Let's make it here. And I think the disruption to the business model is the thing that is freaking the big solar industry out. This case, it's going to take a while to decide, a few months, but there's already, the big solar folks want to stop it in its tracks before it even gets started. They can't do that, by the way, but they'd like to, yeah. If they could.
But this is where not having a domestic manufacturing base, is a problem. This is why, I go back to the Obama years, and I remember all of my conservative friends, losing their minds over, we put so much money into Solyndra, and we put all this money into solar. Yeah, you have to put money into these industries to help prop them up for a short period of time. We have to be investing in this stuff to get them going, as we did with the oil industry. How many subsidies have we given the oil industry over the years? They didn't pull themselves up by the bootstraps. They didn't get investor money to do this stuff. We've been subsidizing them for decades. How about we, think about that here and build domestic capacity, because we can't build them here, right? I mean, this isn't something where we need the Chinese, right?
That's exactly right. And when it all shakes out, when you scale up the demand in the U.S. market, and it has been increasing quite a bit, Rick, I think, as you know, and we've seen that growth in the residential and the commercial and the utility scale. And so the demand is going to be there. The question is, where's the supply going to come from? Now, in the past, I think this is fair to say, I don't think that the installers or whoever knew that the demand was going to be here, right? Because our policy has been kind of, has been up and down on this for the last couple of decades. I think it's irreversibly up now, just because the cost differential is good for solar. And so I think that's good. I think that's excellent headed into the future when you're just looking at it from a financial perspective. But the problem now is going to be that we're so dependent on these imports the solar companies haven't done. And so here's the thing. This is what gets me. The fossil fuel industry, as you know, very dependent on bringing stuff in from overseas, right? From the Middle East, from Venezuela, from the North Sea, from other places. But realized that, a lot of that gets out of their control, and invested heavily in domestic production of natural gas and oil. And we've seen that surge in the United States. Obviously, that creates serious climate problems. But it showed that at least that industry kind of understand that you needed to get some domestic capacity online. Here's one thing that the solar folks should take as an example is, like, you need to scale up your domestic capacity here. It's going to be good for your costs in the long run to be able to control more of it and not to depend on unreliable suppliers like China, and also to sacrifice your moral values in the process. And it's going to be illegal, by the way, to import things from Xinjiang that are made with the slave labor, basically starting in June.
Yeah.
So it's time to cut that stuff off and to invest here in the United States.
No, and this is where we need policy to do this. You know, and it seems to me, and look, I look at solar as something that the free market is never going to invest in, because there's no way that they're going to be able to make monthly profits off of me putting solar panels on my roof. At least I can't figure out how that's going to happen, how they're going to be able to make long-term profits off of me being energy independent. I think we as taxpayers, we as a country should be investing in huge solar farms. You know, you look at, we've got deserts. We've got massive amounts of basically worthless space where we could throw up entire massive solar farms, could probably provide energy for half the country nothing, for just the cost of the panels, and it would be there for almost ever.
Yeah, no, you're right. Concentrated solar power and a lot of the field. I mean, there's so, again, as I said, we have a comparative advantage in sun. You know, we should be kicking butt in solar, and we are scaling it up. But we have to. You're right. We have to have that domestic production policy. But here's what the solar, you know, the critics of this trade case say: well, that's what we should do. We should have clean energy tax credits to help make the stuff here. We don't need this trade enforcement. And I say that's wrong. You need both. You got to do both, because unless you can have all the incentives in the world right here in the United States, but if those subsidized, you know, or dumped imports are coming in, those are the things that are going to get utilized by the contractors, by the installers, because they're going to make better margins.
Yeah.
So you have to level that playing field. And that does involve trade enforcement. And the unfortunate thing about this, Rick, is that there are a lot of Democrats, some of whom are progressive, who have bought hook, line, and sinker, kind of like this big solar industry argument on this trade case, and say, you know, it's like an existential threat to climate change efforts is what they are claiming. Which is completely wrong. And so the problem is that a lot of these big solar companies in the United States, now there are a few that are domestic, like that have production in Ohio or are based here, but most of them are Asian or even Chinese. And so they have, they have other motivations here. They want to keep their operations in Asia busy as well. They don't have that interest in locating the production in the United States. And so trade enforcement actually helps with that. We know that from steel. We know that from the battery investments that we've seen, that if you have a comprehensive policy, you can, in fact, do that stuff right here at home. It'll be close to your customers. I mean, the U.S. is going to be a massively expanding solar market over the next couple of decades.
Yeah, you're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Scott Paul. Scott's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. AmericanManufacturing.org is their website. Make sure you check that out and the incredible work that they do. Fighting for American jobs, American manufacturing, domestic production for domestic consumption. And this is one of those issues that I think is really, really important. Because you mentioned climate change. I mean, if we're going to fight climate change, the jobs have to be part of this. We need to bring this in and create those jobs here at home and make sure that people have the ability to get those. But also, for me, the other important part of this is that we have control of those products, that we're making those, and that we make the replacements for it, and that they don't suck.
Right. That's right. So, I mean, you raise a couple of key points, one of which, you know, look, we know from the last couple of years that the more control you have over your supply chain, which means the more that you're making here at home, the fewer risks you're going to entail from unpredictable events, whether it's weather or some shipping bottleneck or, say, a pandemic, Rick, like we just went through. And so why they haven't learned that lesson yet? God, I have a hard time understanding that. It's because they haven't necessarily had to bear the cost. Ultimately, they may. But the other thing about this is that, you know, in this quest to go solar, which I believe is very important, we should not be sacrificing other environmental values as well. The conditions under which that polysilicon in Xinjiang are produced, it's with coal-fired plants. It is very old school. So you have slave labor, you have coal-fired plants, and then you have China saying, you know what, let's route this through some other countries so it's not subject to the duties. And the installers are like, that's great because we'll make more money. And so, you know what, let's have a level playing field. Let's do this the right way. And as you suggest, let's invest heavily in this, in the capital cost, because just like with fossil fuels, oil and gas, that's what we do. You know, it's expensive to set up exploration or whatever. We should offset the costs of standing up solar in the United States, because it will be, we'll have a great ROI in terms of our climate goals and in terms of being able to get more of this for consumers who ultimately will save money on their electricity. I'll bet you like your electricity bill a lot better since you installed the solar.
Yeah, we produce about 40% of our electricity with our panels, and I wish I could do more. Let's get Mike from Los Angeles on the phone with a question. You got a question for Scott, Mike?
No, I don't have a question. I have a comment. I studied environmental issues for 40 years since the Jimmy Carter administration. I just returned from Alaska, where I used to live. And again, it's 40 years of Reaganomics. We should have been, when Jimmy Carter said we want to get 20% renewable by the year 2000, get ourselves off fossil fuels so we don't have to fight wars to protect imported oil. He was right on target. And then the Reagan administration came in and said, don't worry about it, we'll just import more oil. Quickly, oil is ocean sediment. It's plankton. It's 100 to 300 million years old. I studied to be a geologist in Texas, of all places, and we're running out. We've hit peak oil, but stream of consciousness. What they do in L.A. is they put the solar panels on your car, on your house or your home, and then you pay the installer or the solar panel manufacturer back instead of paying the energy bill. So, you know, we're already doing some stuff, but we need to do more. And you guys are right on the mark. It's policy. We need to go back to a sane trade policy, which the founding fathers put into place to collect tariffs to balance our trade out. So you guys are right on the money. I mean, in Germany, they're apparently putting solar panels all over the place. They're all over the place in L.A. right now, but we need to do more.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's stream consciousness real quickly. I mean, that's why important elections make a difference. Elections are important. And again, we're paying for the Reagan era, for the lack of sane trade policy, the lack of collecting trade tariffs, which funded our government, ignoring the environment, screwing trade. I hope I can say that on the air. And you know, this is 40 years later, and so elections make a big difference. But I think I'm very hopeful. I get depressed about climate change every day. Here's why I'm hopeful. I've seen people don't argue with me about climate change anymore. I studied natural history in college. I studied to be a geologist at one point. And they don't argue about it anymore because we're seeing it right in front of our eyes. If you would have told me that all the car manufacturers would have gone solar this year or last
electric.
Year,
yeah.
I'd say, nah, it's not going to happen that quick. And it did. And
yeah.
I don't know what it's like in Chicago, but here in L.A., there's Teslas all over the place and there are charging stations all over the place. No. Real quickly, I met a guy in Anchorage, Alaska, that has solar panels all on his roof, and he's charging his electric car in the driveway with it. You know, in Alaska, for example, we have more solar radiation than they do in Germany. Tom Harmon talks about it a lot. Mm-hmm. So yep. It's totally doable. You guys are making the right comments, and I think we can turn the corner. You know, I'm sorry, this is why I'm a Democrat. We need to get the House and the Senate back and maintain the White House, and we'll get things done.
There you go. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate
our
it.
Our congressmen and legislatures.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Mike. No, I mean, Mike's spot on. I mean, I go back to that moment Reagan ripped the solar panels off the White House. Yeah, that was our commitment to oil for the next 40 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we invented this technology. We had it on our house of government. And now we depend on slave labor in a place halfway across the world to bring the stuff back to the United States. It is that's absolutely crazy. And Mike is right. So, you know, the point about Germany is a very good one, because if Germany is not a low cost country, as you know, Rick, right? It has strong unions. It has strong environmental regulations. But it found a way to scale up solar and to manufacture it domestically because it had a policy in place to not only bring solar online, but to produce it in Germany By the way, Germany doesn't get nearly as much sunshine as most parts of the United States. So if they can do it there, we can do it here. I mean, it's as simple as that. It just takes policy, but it takes that level playing field on trade, which is why this case needs to work its way through its process without interference from these outside parties.
So last question, you know, what do we do about it? I mean, clearly we don't want this to push through, but we want to make sure that we get it right. What should people be doing?
Rick, that's a great question. We have a petition on our website right now at AmericanManufacturing.org to make sure that the Commerce Department knows that we believe that they should conduct a full and thorough investigation of this and ignore all the noise that's out there about the sky is falling on this, because it certainly is not. We need to do the right thing. We need to make sure our trade laws are enforced and that we're making those solar panels right here in the United States. But AmericanManufacturing.org, we have the petition, they're going to start this investigation any day now, and they'll conclude it in August. So time is of the essence.
Great stuff. Scott, I appreciate the time. As always, great talk with you. I appreciate you taking time for us.
Likewise, Rick. Appreciate it. Appreciated caller Mike as well. He made some great points.
Good stuff. Our good friend Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Again, make sure you check out the website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Sign the petition. Help out that way, and maybe call your congressman and let them know as well. As always, remember, if you miss any of the show, make sure you grab the podcast. Share with your friends, subscribe, comment, and make sure you give us a 5-star rating. As always, very helpful. We'll take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, it's interesting that Scott brings up or Mike actually brought up Germany and Scott as well. You know, I remember, you know, and this has been years, you know, Germany went all in on solar. Their billboards on the side of the road, those are huge solar panels. Your communities, that the entire community, every house in it, every store, every business had it in there, because what they would done is, I remember, you were able to sell back anything you generated. Communities were, you know, subsidizing their tax base by selling back the excess energy that they were creating back to the grid. And I think it was something like 6 times the going, whatever the rate was. So, like, if it was a penny a kilowatt hour, let's just argue that's what it was. I don't know what it was, but let's say it was a penny. You got 6 cents back. So the incentive was to produce and conserve and then, you know, sell back, because, you know, they clearly, the energy company wouldn't then have to produce from other sources. So you were literally producing the energy for the energy company that they were then spreading out across the grid, which, you know, was helpful for the entire country that they would use in other ways. And I remember saying years ago, and this is, you know, this is going back, you know, 7-8 years ago that I was talking about this, maybe even 10 now that I'm thinking about it. Why can't we do stuff like this? No, actually, it had to be 10, because it was right around the time that we put the solar panels on our house. And we did that back in 12, because the state of Pennsylvania had a sunshine fund. If I remember, the Obama administration had some money to do it. So we got some subsidies in both places that made it a lot more affordable. Now, granted, the state of Pennsylvania completely boogered it up by not having the energy portfolio meet the demand. So what had been the solar energy renewable credits, the SRECs, at the time we bought were like $225 a credit. So for every kilowatt hour you created, you got like $225. It's down to like 7 now. It's almost not even worth, you know, tracking and doing the paperwork to get. But back then, it was, because it was a significant portion of the state's energy portfolio. But Republicans, again, here in the state, didn't bother to increase it at all and had no interest. In fact, if I remember, there was only one Republican, Representative Ross was his name. And I don't think he's there anymore. But he was the only Republican that was pushing to increase that because he understood, look, New Jersey across the river, they're getting like $500 a credit. And the solar industry there is booming. There's nothing in Pennsylvania. There's not much left. In fact, the company that put our panels on, you can't get them to come out and service anything because there's no money in it for them because there's no industry left. And this is why you have to have the policy to back it all up. You have to have the parts. You have to have the production. It's all got to be here. And, you know, I've got friends in California who say, yeah, it's booming out here because the policy, the production, the brain power all have to be there together. You can't have one and not the other. And this is where, again, I keep coming back to. It's smart policy, sound investment, and good people. You can't miss any of that. And you certainly can't have lobby groups who are trying to kill it off or take the low road, which is why I think, you know, the lobby group for the solar industry just wants the cheapest inputs they can possibly get so they can make the most money off of it. At least that's my thought. Love to hear yours. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Always there, always available. Also, share your thoughts with us by making a comment and leaving a rating. That simple.